Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll hear from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, a focus on China. As the G20 has rolled into town, or more specifically, the city of Hangzhou, we'll be taking the temperature on the ground. Monocle's man in China will set the scene for us, and our panel of global experts will mark the occasion to assess where we are, 12 months on from China's surprise devaluation. This time last year, global markets were sent into shock by the yuan's devaluation. So, has everything turned out as our experts were expecting? We start with Justin Bergman, Monocle correspondent in Shanghai, who sets the scene for us. Hangzhou is preparing for its moment in the spotlight, this being China's first G20, of course. There's been a narrative around the security measures, changes to the city for residents and more. Justin explains how Hangzhou has prepared for its moment in the sun.
Every time China has one of these really big international events like the Olympics, the World Expo, now G20, they are super, super prepared. They're really concerned about the image that they project to the rest of the world. So, you know, undoubtedly, they're going to be really well organized. They're going to be putting forth an image of a very clean and green Chinese city. That's been the, you know, the preparations have been going on for months, if not longer, to try to make this happen. So you've had building new parks, you've had designing new lighting for the famous West Lake tourist attraction. There's been new condos being built and old ones being torn down, residents being moved, all of that kind of thing, which normally happens. And also, I think the most apparent change to the city and also in the region is that the skies are actually blue. For the last few weeks, the factories have been shut down in Hangzhou, the area around it, five provinces actually in the region. So you have blue skies all the way to Shanghai, where I live. And this is going to continue all the way through the conference. This is one of the big things that China is most concerned about is air pollution. They don't want any photographs of gritty, grainy skies during the event.
So are people there more focused on how China presents its face to the world than on, say, the economics?
The economic issues don't really trickle down. People don't really care as much about that as they do about China looking good in the international media. In fact, Hangzhou has mobilized a huge force of residents to act as volunteers during this meeting. In fact, I think in the Chinese media, I read it's about a tenth of the city's population, which is 7 million people, have been mobilized to be on the streets acting as volunteers, you know, practicing their English, trying to get people around if foreigners are looking lost. So there really is this big effort to put forth this image that Chinese cities are as developed and as progressive as anywhere else in the world. You also have noticed this a lot in the Chinese media lately. There's been a lot of hype about this meeting, not just about the economics, but about China's role in the world and how it sees itself. People already saying that this is going to be one of the most significant G20s in the history of the summits, with more focus on development and less on international crises than we've seen in the past. So this is also translated to some defensiveness in the Chinese media. You've seen some remarks hitting back at Western media for slights that the Chinese are perceived that have been directed toward them and the preparations. This is normal, but I think that when the G20 is over, everybody will be pretty impressed by what China has done, at least in the domestic media, the domestic online chatter as well.
Justin Bergman. Now on to the yuan. 1 year on from China's surprise devaluation that sent global stock markets into shock, did it all turn out how our experts expected? Angus Grigg is China correspondent for the Australian Financial Review, based in Shanghai.
Well, I guess the issue was that when the devaluation came a year ago, it really took markets by surprise because the Premier himself had told various interviews that he planned to keep the currency stable here in China. Now, what happened was that they actually changed the definition of what they thought a stable currency was. Rather than benchmarking it basically against the US dollar, they decided to benchmark it against a basket of currencies, which allowed them to find a sort of a definitional reason, I guess, for devaluating the currency. Now, the issue was that markets were totally taken by surprise by that devaluation. And what you saw was that currency or money flowed out of the economy here in China very quickly because people thought that this was the first of many devaluations. Now, the issue since then was that the Chinese government responded to that sentiment of huge capital outflows by pumping unprecedented amount of capital into the economy here. So What we've seen in the last 12 months is really unprecedented levels of monetary easing, if you like, here in China. So we've seen credit growing at levels above 15%, credit growing at the strongest level, according to some people, since the global financial crisis. And so that has really refloated the economy here. So rather than seeing huge capital outflows, we've actually seen people kept their money here in China, and that has allowed the currency to stabilise, but also the economy to pick up slightly. Now, the issue with that is that most people think that the amount of credit they're pumping into the economy is unsustainable. And so while, sure, it's stabilised the economy for the moment and stabilised the currency, people think that that is unsustainable. And so we're really in a bit of a holding pattern here in China, waiting to see what the government does next.
12 months since the devaluation. Did it all turn out how you expected? Well, yes and no, says Techlang Tang, Asian currencies analyst in the UBS Wealth Management CIO.
I think some parts, yes, is within our expectations, and some parts, no. I think what has came in within our expectations is the fact that the surprise devaluation that we got last August of about 2% on the day itself and another about 2% in the following weeks after didn't morph into much bigger devaluation in the sense of some investors calling for a 7-level target to be reached within months of that event. That we had gotten it right. We had called for a pace of decline somewhere in the region of about 4 to 5 percentage points over a one-year horizon. And I think as far as we can see, this is the path that the Chinese central bank is going down. So that has been within our expectations.
And here's UBS China economist Yifan Hu.
In the past year, we could say, first, I think for their management, it's much more transparent. Before, I think they rarely communicate with the market, and then now they start to communicate at different levels, even use the online articles. And so let the market to avoid the shocks. And the second, I think they are more proficiency. So currently, I think that they use multi measures and try to manage the floating, especially to smoothing line this kind of floating. Third, I think it's very important. They are managing floating more follow the trend. So last year, especially at the beginning of this year, I think the depreciation of the yuan caused a large volatility in the market. Is that because only yuan depreciated? Why other currency actually appreciated or actually kept stable with the dollar? So this year we found it's very interesting. For the yuan, always I try to follow the global trend. In May, when the Fed announced they might hike the rate, that's leading to all the currencies appreciation. So did for Chinese yuan. And also this time, I think that when the Yellen, another hint is the possibility. So I think that the yen also followed the trend, depreciated mildly. So this kind of following the trend, this kind of new measures that make also the CNY a fluctuation much more smoother comparing to the last year.
We've summarized how expectations have been fulfilled since the yuan devaluation in 2015. But what's been without expectations? Techlang Tang again.
Capital control seems to be even more effective than we had initially thought. So I think there were fears around how fast capital can escape from China, given the level of FX reserves, even at 3.6 trillion to start with. Some people are questioning about whether that is enough if there is an outflow of about 150 billion a month or 200 billion a month. And simple math would tell you that they can't last anything beyond 2 years. So I think we were positively surprised by the effectiveness of the capital controls, and that's one thing we didn't quite expect. And number two, what we didn't quite expect is that the tightening timetable from the U.S. Federal Reserve has also been slowed dramatically. Earlier in the last year, we were expecting them to be hiking a lot faster than how we expect them to right now. So I guess that also helped to stabilize the mindset around how much the Chinese currency can devalue in terms of magnitude versus the dollar.
That's Techlang Tan. Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll consider why, with the yuan continuing to depreciate against the dollar, US equity markets are nevertheless rising close to all-time highs. And we'll look ahead and consider some of the other issues we should be thinking about when it comes to investment strategy and insights around the yuan. Now, while the yuan has continued to depreciate against the US dollar, markets are rising close to or passing all-time highs in the United States. Why is this happening? Well, it's all about credit, explains Angus Grigg.
The government has essentially refloated the economy here by pumping unprecedented amounts of credit into the economy. So you've seen, you know, near record amounts of steel production in the middle of this year. You have seen consumer sentiment or consumer spending hold up fairly strongly. And so generally sentiment has improved, you're right, but it still begs the question of whether it's sustainable or not. So we're really in a situation where people aren't really sure what happens next. Does the government take the foot off the pedal and try and gradually lower credit growth as they've been doing previously? Or do we see a continuation of this sort of go-for-growth policy that the Premier announced in March? And maybe that plays out for another year or 15 months towards the end of next year when we have a very big, important political event here, which is the changeover of the Standing Committee. And then from then on, we see perhaps efforts to sort of rein in credit growth. So really at the moment, it's a situation where people, while they're not worried about the short-term prospects for the Chinese economy, they're even more worried about the long-term prospects for the Chinese economy.
Why does Tech Leng Tan think we're seeing this market reaction?
The fact that the continued depreciation of the Chinese yuan didn't unsettle markets was primarily, you could say, the effort has been paid off on the side of the Central Bank of China. Because as opposed to the unexpected devaluation that people first got spooked upon last August, this time round they have been much more active in communicating on the currency on a monthly basis or bi-weekly basis. So I guess what helped is that there has been much more assurance from the Chinese Central Bank that even though that the Chinese currency is depreciating, they are not trying to go for a one-off devaluation of, say, 5 to 10% within a week. And I think that's what investors are more afraid of, and that has been what investors had on their mind when they tried to bring capital out of China. As long as the Fed is on a very gradual path, that would probably be a bigger reason why I see the US equities having done so well year to date.
Why are investors now more relaxed, seemingly, about China? And should they be? Well, there's a need for a wait-and-see approach in terms of longer-term strategy, says Angus Grigg. So it looks like there's 15 to 18 months to wait.
People are unwilling to commit to sort of longer-term investments in China until they see the direction the government is taking on economic policy. And so I think while people might sort of look at short-term prospects, maybe of the share market, even of the property market, they're unwilling to bet on the big rebalancing of the Chinese economy, which has been talked about for so many years. And they're probably looking at, you know, short-term trends here and there, but I don't think we're going to see until probably another 15 or 18 months till we get a better indication of whether the Chinese government here is willing to take the hard decisions on economic reform, whether they're willing to restructure the industrial sector here in China. And until we see a clear indication of that, which may be a year or 18 months away, I don't think people are going to be comfortable with the long-term prospects of the Chinese economy. And probably as a result of that, they will be very sort of short-term focused. So you may see a pickup in equities markets, depending on what the credit situation is here in China. People would still be sort of very reasonably positive on consumer sentiment, but I don't think anyone is particularly confident about the long-term outlook for the Chinese economy.
What other issues should we be thinking about when it comes to investment strategy? And what other insights do our experts have around the yuan? Yifan Hu summarises the UBS house view on CNY trends. Smooth depreciation is the watchword.
We UBS think that at the end of the year, it's the CNY USD will at the 6.8. So that's about 4.5% of depreciation against the dollar. So comparing to the 4.6%, so that's mild, gradual depreciation. So it's widely accepted. We think this trend will continue. So that probably the next year we will enter the seventh age. So I think that probably will keep the trend for a while. But at the same time, we will not see it's a kind of sharp depreciation. So that should be kind of shock. So I think there will be quite smooth depreciation like for the coming year as well.
When it comes to investment strategy, pay attention to whether the Chinese government can manage a soft landing. Tech Leng Tang explains.
The way we look at it right now is that at least on the side of the policymakers, they have a lot of room to manage a soft landing. If you think about the tools at their disposal, whenever there is any risk of systemic credit crunch or liquidity issues, you should take note that actually with a reserve requirement ratio at 17%, they have way a lot more room to cut and to inject liquidity into the system to prevent any systemic risk of liquidity. So as long as the Chinese manage to engineer a soft landing, I think the fears around Chinese yuan devaluation and trading against the central bank is actually going to be quite effort in vain. So one thing that I will continue to watch out for is whether the Chinese would be able to engineer a soft landing, and the moment it does seem to be the case.
Yifan Hu adds one more footnote. There remain many questions around when China will lift capital controls.
Many investors actually always ask one question, so that when China will lift the capital control, because that's also very important. So in my view, I think that China will start to do that probably once they see a dynamic capital inflows and outflows. So inflows, that means like probably with the development of the Chinese bonds market, allowing more long-term funds to invest in the Chinese domestic bonds more directly without QFII quotas. And then we could see more dynamic flows, then the Chinese government will be more confident to open. So that's probably also another question asked most. So in sum, we would say after 1 year's anniversary, we not say it's an already success, but we at least think it's a big progress for China.
And a last word to Tech Lang Tang on other things to watch out for.
It would be the amount of capital control measures that they have put in place, because I think recently it is interesting that the latest Shenzhen Hong Kong Stock Connect, it's quite surprising that the central bank has decided to not have any quotas on the amount of inflows and outflows from this program. I think you can actually take that as a sign of confidence that the authorities have the capital flows under control, so they are not that worried about Chinese investors bringing a lot of money out through this new avenue by investing in Hong Kong through the Shenzhen Hong Kong Stock Connect. So I think what we should be also looking out for is for them to gradually open room for there to be more capital inflows and outflows, starting with the recent Stock Connect, trying to test water where there could be more outflows than they initially thought. Another interesting development recently is the introduction of the special depository rights bonds issues by Chinese state-owned banks and corporates. I think they are done with the intention to try to make the yuan a more international currency. And at the same time, they are trying to boost capital inflows through issuing this Chinese yuan denominated SDR bonds.
That's Tech Lang Tan bringing us to the end of this 100th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via iTunes, SoundCloud or your preferred platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.